We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds.
Engage.
Enterprise, Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Catherine Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Failing frequencies open, sir.
Yes, we're back for another episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Hoffman, at J Hoffman on Twitter, Facebook.com/Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. Please follow us on all. Maybe we're on Tumblr, Snapchat, Six Apart, all of your social networks. Follow us. This is a big episode, and I want to jump right in. Thank you for listening. My communicator is... Oh, wait, I just heard something. I think somebody's at the door. Yes, our friend Chris Radke is here from Geek.com. I'm going to teleport him in. I teleport somebody at the door because I don't want to get up. He's materializing before... Wait, we need an extra wide beam. Hello.
Hello.
We got Chris Radke here, the editor-in-chief of Geek.com and a true friend of Star Trek. Of Star Wars, of Marvel Comics, of DC Comics.
The popular arts.
You love the popular arts.
I do love the popular arts.
Your one main love, though, isn't Star Trek. It's Marvel, right? That's your biggest love, other than your wife?
That's hard, man. It's either Marvel or Star Wars.
See, but, Marvel's so vast.
But I think Marvel has really kind of... it's been really hard to hold on to the Star Wars banner the way that I've clutched onto it all these years. Marvel is just... feel really good about things. But you know what I also love?
Yeah.
Is Star Trek.
Of course you do.
Yes.
Of course you do. So, you know, I'm glad we have you for this episode because one of the things that I love about Star Trek is its deep, deep mythos.
It has a very deep mythos.
And for some, it's intimidating. For some, they get scared. They go, oh, you have to learn Klingon to like Star Trek? And that's not
Quick,
true.
To Memory Alpha, I go. Yes.
And that's not true. You don't. But if you do, you know, as they say in the movie Days of Confused, it's a lot cooler if you do.
A lot cooler if you did. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm struggling right now because I have two young ones at home that have asked me, like, what's up with Star Trek? You're giving us everything else. Why aren't you giving us the Star Trek?
Yeah.
And I have not figured out where to start. And a lot of people are like, I'll just start at the beginning. And I don't know if... today's kids are gonna really is that's the right place to start.
You have very energetic children.
I do.
They're not
I'm like, I'm thinking I just start with Beyond and just go from there.
That's not the worst idea. That's not the worst idea. Or at least the 2009 version, excuse me. Your children are very energetic, and I don't think that you know, TOS would necessarily work with them at first. When they grow to love Kirk, Spock, and Bones, maybe it
right.
would. And TNG, I don't know. I think
TNG has got some. It takes some. You know, yeah. Needs to get its sea legs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you must jump right into season four.
I can't do that personally. You know,
no, you
I mean,
can't.
It's not about like you know. I'll talk about Star Wars for a brief second. It's the same thing with the Clone Wars cartoon. I love Star Wars. But like, I don't want to watch all of that. Stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So someone put together a list of like, you watch these key episodes.
Right.
And I tried to do it that way, but I am a completist. I'm obsessive.
No, that's why you're the manager and editing in chief of geek.com. You and, must be. Yeah.
And that's when I looked at it. I was like, nope, I got to. And then I got slogged through all this garbage.
Well, I think what you should do then is start with Star Trek 09 for your kids. I think that your young son will eventually grow to love Worf.
He's very Worf-like.
He will love Worf.
It's famous orc, Worf.
he will love Worf, so eventually you'll get him into some DS9.
Yes.
Who will your daughter love? Your daughter will love Spock.
She'll love Spock. She'll love Janeway. She'll love Tasha Yar. She'll love, you know who she'll love? She'll love, oh my goodness, what am I doing? What's her name?
Counselor Troy?
No. The Ensign Roe.
She will love.
She's going to be like, Ensign Roe is just like mom, and that's where it's going to come down.
That's funny for the five people who know who your wife is.
Personal jokes.
All right, well, listen, but I brought you in there because I want to talk deep mythos. There's something that's happening right now in the Star Trek universe that's just amazing.
The myriad universe.
That's really cool. And we talk a little bit about the IDW comics. Now, you love Marvel, but you love...
I love IDW. I got to tell you right now, speaking of IDW...
Yeah.
I just read a sneak preview of the new G.I. Joe comic out of IDW, done by our friend Aubrey Sitterson.
The great Aubrey Sitterson of Scald fame.
Listen to Scald. His mythos is deep. The stuff that they're doing with G.I. Joe is next level, and I think that's going to be the breakout book of next year.
Awesome. Well, that's a tip.
And their track record with... The Trek property is really impressive.
Yes, IDW does have a lot of great creator stuff. Yeah, what's it called? Original creative stuff. But
they're writing the book on licensed comics, man. I mean, their Ponies book is wonderful.
Transformers
is pretty good.
What's that?
More than meets the eye.
That's solid. That is the one.
Brian's a fan. All right. So what's happening with Trek right now? And we've talked about comics before, but I won't get specific about an issue that just went out.
Oh, is it the
Waypoint
Burn
number
Fumetti?
Two?
Oh no. Okay.
No. There's. Because they just announced also that they're going to do a crossover with Aliens. Did you know that?
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, that's news. Yeah, that's going to be cool because they did the crossover with Green Lantern, which was cool.
Oh, no, we're going to get Data and Bishop.
Yeah. I know you don't like Data.
I don't like Data. I'm sorry, Star Trek fans.
But Data and Bishop's kind of perfect. I mean,
kind of. Data and 3PO is perfect, too, but that would be really annoying as well.
All right, so here's what's going on right now. You got the ongoing, which is called Boldly Go, just had issue 2 a couple weeks ago, which is great. That's our friend Mike Johnson and the illustrator Tony Chastine. And what's going on there is it takes place right after Star Trek Beyond ended, right? The last shot is the three of them watching this new ship being built.
Sure.
And what do they do between the next adventure? Well, I'll tell you. Spock and Uhura take a holiday, and they go to Vulcan, and they're like, her hair is down, and she's in like a nightgown.
Yeah.
And like, it's very, very nice. And Spock is like in a cloak reading computers.
Wait. They go to Vulcan.
New Vulcan.
Excuse me. What?
Yeah, no, they go to New Vulcan. And there's like 12, so it's like a private island. They go to like a place where there's like not very many Vulcans left.
Right.
Sarek is there, but it kind of, you know, it's a planet that looks, you know, the habitat is similar to Vulcan.
Exactly.
So it's like a desert. They go to Taos, New Mexico, you know. So that's going on. And Kirk, you know, he can't relax. So he is temporary captain of the Endeavor. Right?
Mm.
And so he's flying around, and then Sulu is elsewhere, and Sulu's ship is attacked. And Sulu's daughter and husband are on that ship.
Oh.
And they get attacked, by the Borg.
Oh, man, that is a big deal.
We issue 1 and issue 2 is already out, so it ends with, like, we only heard one, they only repeated one phrase. Turn the page. They said, resistance is futile. Blah!
Wow.
And then you flip out. So we have Kelvin versus Borg.
Yeah. Suddenly the timeline is diverged once more.
But that's not even what I wanted to talk about. The other comic that's happening right now, in addition to what's his name? John Byrne's lunacy, which we've talked about.
Can we talk about it? Can you and I talk about it a little bit?
We've talked about it on the show before, but yeah, I think we should. But the other thing that's happening is a bi-monthly. Now, when I read that, I got excited. I thought it was every 2 weeks. Bi-monthly.
Sci-fi con.
Bi-monthly means every 2 months.
Right.
So that's not as exciting.
It means you like all the months.
Yeah, I mean, bi-monthly means you swing with both months. Bi-mon sci-fi con. is called Star Trek Waypoint. And what this is it's two stories. So it's bi-monthly and bi-story.
Right.
And they are non-canonical, which is going to bring us into the crux of this episode.
Non-canonical, oh, I see where we're going with this.
Sort of like myriad universe stuff. And all it is so far is like the most...
It's anthology stuff.
But like the in pure Star Trek beauty, the most obscure things blown out into...
It is that it's the equivalent of going to like... the record shop to buying bootlegs. It's like, how obscure can right. we possibly, like, right. you know, this 1979 AC/DC concert that was,
right, right, right.
that I have on three albums.
So I got to tell you about issue two of Waypoint. I'm going to spoil it because by the time this airs, it's been out a few weeks.
Okay.
Issue two of Waypoint is two stories. The first one is by our friends Dayton Ward, who's been on the show, and Kevin Dillmore, and the illustrator, Mr. Gordon Purcell, who I don't know.
Hmm.
And what it is just amazing. Their story is called The Menace of the Mechatronics.
Oh boy.
And what that means is the very first Star Trek comics was your history. What was the name of the publishing company?
Key.
Gold Key.
Gold
very
Key.
Good. And
I knew
what
that.
Gold Key Comics did was they made comics at the time that Star Trek was on the air that had almost no relation to the show. They were working off very limited publicity stills to the point that they thought Janice Rand was one of the most important. characters. They didn't really know the, you know, everybody was, Scotty was a jerk. Spock would beat people up. The ship didn't look right.
They called him Dr. Spock.
there was like a pink hue over everything because they didn't know what they were doing. And they were like published in Italy or something like that. I don't know. But they were a mess, but they've gained a cult following, obviously. To,
sure.
to the point that you can buy nicely
they put them out in big books and,
right.
and IDWs.
They're hilarious.
The collector's edition.
So what Ward and Dillmore did, because they are the truest of the hardcore, they have done their story in the style of Gold Key.
Oh, cool.
So for the first time in 50 years, you can read a Gold Key
wow.
style.
That's a love letter to a very certain like portion of the fandom
so
pie.
So here's how a love letter is. I'm reading it at my kitchen. I go to my friends at Midtown Comics, as I do every Key Wednesday.
Does that issue come in a larger typeface
for the old timers?
Target audience?
So I bought my issue. I brought it home. I'm sitting at the kitchen table, mm-hmm. and I have the lamp is above. Of the kitchen table, and I'm sitting
picturing
there.
Like a Stella Dora commercial from the early 80s.
Yeah, first
right
of
now.
All, I'm wearing an Italian man's T-shirt and yeah. suspenders.
Are there stains on that shirt?
Of course, there are stains okay. on the shirt. So I'm eating. You know, I got a bowl of pasta over here, some Stella Dora breadsticks over here. My wife has her hair in curlers, and she's vacuuming. You know, so that's what's going on. Okay, so I'm sitting at the table and I'm reading this story, and I'm like, oh man, like. Did I spill something on this? Because that wouldn't be out of the ordinary
sure.
for me. And because the lamp is like shining around, so I'm kind of moving the book under the lamp, and I realize they have mimicked like the paper
wow.
in this comic to look frayed and like stained and like ripped up because that's what Gold Key comics are. You
right.
find them in the back somewhere. So it's such a love letter. And then the second one is written by a woman by the name of Sam Maggs and illustrated by a woman named Rachel Stott. And it is about one of the greatest asterisks in all of Star Trek.
Mress?
No, Mress has been in comics before. It's
okay.
not about Mress. It's about Yeoman Leslie Thompson.
Oh.
Yeoman Leslie Thompson was the... Oh, you don't know who that is. Don't bullshit me. You love Star Trek. You don't know who she is. She is the only red shirt from TOS woman to dye a red shirt. That's how progressive Star Trek was that they would kill a woman, which you didn't do back then. And she was killed in the coolest way in the episode by any other name when the Kelvins came, which is just a coincidence at the Kelvin timeline.
Okay, there's no relation to the
no
timeline.
No relation. The Kelvins from the Andromeda Galaxy come, and to show Kirk's power, they take two red shirts and turn them into these dodecahedron cubes of chalk to say, these are your... Yeoman's Kirk.
Wow.
And one of them smushes and turns her into dust and then throws her on the ground, and that's how she dies. So this short story is like a little bit about her life and like what she did
leading up to her.
Yeah, and it's like don't remember me for my weirdo death, remember me for my life. And what we never realized is when, because she was a redshirt, she worked in engineering. When Scotty was the miracle worker running around saving the ship, he's got a team. He's got a posse. And she was under there with her.
She was OG Keenster.
Right. Keenzer. Yeah, she was down there with her, you know, sonic screwdriver or whatever, right, getting in there and fixing things. And then it ends, I swear to you, this has been an emotional time. I've got some
Michigas. Yeah, we all got a lot of things going on.
Got a lot of Michigas with the government, with my personal life. I'm sitting at the kitchen table, and I swear to you, Brian's leaving. He doesn't even want to hear about the story. For the first time in Engage, the official Star Trek podcast history, Brian the engineer has gotten up and left the room. Now he's back. What happened?
Okay, the music turned down.
Oh, they were too loud outside?
I heard some music, some beats.
Was the Drink Champs was next door?
No, they're not here yet.
All right. So, dig this. Leslie Thompson's dead, and her name's on a wall somewhere in the Starfleet Academy of all the people who've died. And it's the writing is very lovely and poetic about, like, don't think of me and how I died. Think about how I inspired and whatnot. And you see a person looking at the name, and you see hand, and then you see a person in silhouette walking away, and then you turn the page. It's a nice cover.
It's Janeway.
It is Janeway.
Cool.
And, you know, the young Janeway, and they don't say her name. You just recognize her.
Right.
And I swear to God, listen, audience of
chills.
Engaged,
I just got chills just now.
I wept at the kitchen table. I did, and I tweeted at Sam Maggs and Rachel Stott, and they thought I was joking. I started to cry.
No,
and
we've reached this age now where the slightest thing happens, and I'm just a blubbering mess. And it's like, if you could tweak my popular arts loving nerve, like, it literally, and I've reached the point where, like, I used to be like, oh, there's something in my eye, and now at this point, it's just like I will openly weep. And, like, weep like I'm, like, you know, like you know, like savage primal scream weeping. Like, that's the wand of Watoom! And, like, just losing my mind. You've been there. You've seen it happen.
When the first Marvel Studios logo, when it showed, now it's changed, but when it used to show the flipping flash, pages, yeah.
Forget it. I would be like.
What did you think of the new Doctor Strange has a new Marvel Studios logo?
All right. So if we could, are we allowed to talk about Marvel?
Of course.
Here, you know, that opening logo, the Doctor Strange one, is a bit of an FU to the publishing side of the business.
Oh, inside. Now, wait, this just in. Hold on. Wait.
Isn't that based?
This just in. We got some inside news.
No, this isn't based off on anything other than
theory. Fan theory.
Connecting some threads, right?
Yeah.
So within Marvel, you've got two camps. You've got Marvel Studios and got Marvel Entertainment. Marvel Entertainment is the publisher, right? That's the comics. That's also TV.
Yeah.
And then you've got the movies, which is separate, a separate thing. There used to be this story group that was connected to the entertainment side with the comics, and they were kind of like the arbiters of, you know, keeping it Marvel.
Mm.
And they had to approve all of the stuff that the movie team was doing.
Was that Ike Perlmutter's group?
It was Ike Perlmutter's group.
Okay.
And some of comics' favorite people are a part of that story group.
Right.
What happens, though, is as the studio group started to really succeed and do right by these characters, and Ike has a long history of just being kind of
a bit of a bean counter.
A bit of a bean counter,
yeah.
You know, like, you know, employees bring their own toilet paper to work. So what happens is that story group apparently had a lot of trouble, and it was widely reported that Kevin Feige, who's in charge of the studio, was
Kevin
bristling.
Feige is the Gene Coon of Star Trek.
Yes. I would have said others, but that's a good one. Listen, he went to the head of Disney, said, you either make me autonomous or I'm leaving.
Right.
And the studio group now no longer reports into the entertainment side. It reports straight up to the head of Disney.
They're their own thing.
So when you used to watch that Marvel intro with all the comic books flipping, meaning, like, this is our roots, this is where we're from, that new sequence is like we're like, you know, six dozen movies in.
Yeah.
We've got our own mythos.
Right.
These are our characters.
Mm.
This is our Hawkeye.
They become self-aware.
It's like V'ger has come to life on his own. The V'ger intro of the new Marvel movies. So that, to me, as soon as I saw that, and there was no longer comic book panels, but showing our favorite characters from the past 10 years of Marvel movies, that to me was a we've eclipsed you publishing. Yeah. We're our own thing now.
You know, when and I don't have the exact words, I don't have the line down, and a listener will let us know, but when TNG filmed one more episode than TOS did, mm-hmm. to say, you know, I don't want to say we beat you, but we beat you.
We beat you.
Ha! That's not Picard's way. There was a little reference to it. They said something like, oh, we just passed the blah, blah, blah system, and it was the same system that, you know, the last episode of TOS, Turnabout Intruder.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's a little like a hat, but
that's fantastic.
It was not done in an FU way. It was done in like we're continuing the exploration.
It was done in a very Star Trek way.
Right.
Which is a way of positivity and good feels and good vibes.
Right.
And let's celebrate. where Marvel can be a little antagonistic.
Well, that comes from the Puck. They're New York roots, you know. These are scribblers. They're, you know,
scribblers.
Barely literate, you know.
Stan Lee. The creator of the Marvel Universe and the world's biggest con man. Conventions.
Yeah, convention, the con man, convention man.
Yeah.
So Marvel's your bag. But you love DC too. What is it? Who's your favorite DC character?
Well, that's a tough question. I like Batman quite a bit, but I will tell you my favorite DC character is very specific these days. It is Grant Gustin's Flash. The Flash from the TV show.
Yeah.
Is, if you haven't watched the Flash TV show,
Brian's watched it. Brian loves it.
It is a crowning achievement of nerd culture.
Yeah.
And the reason being is it's a CW show, right? It's got that same like chintzy gloss, mm-hmm. to it, and everyone's kind of beautiful, and it's got like a bunch of, you know, mid-tier actors on it. But what Greg Berlanti has been able to do, and I'm maybe saying his last name wrong, is take the weirdness of Flash.
Yeah.
His rogues gallery is weird. His power set is weird. The things he does with the Speed Force is ridiculous. And some of the most convoluted nonsense to ever come out of convoluted, nonsensical DC. And somehow they created a enormously fun show that embraces all of the weirdness.
Yeah.
No nerd ass shit can possibly go and be nerdier than what they, I mean, like the way that they name their villains, and it all is very true to the core.
Yeah.
And
it's upbeat also.
And the key, oh my God, it's, I mean, there's some dark stuff in it, but it's heroic and it's upbeat, and it has a similar kind of optimism that Star Trek has.
Yeah.
And the actor Grant Gustin, who plays the Flash, is just lovable, and his smile, and he's a hero, and he looks great in the costume. And I gotta tell you, man, I know you're not watching it, and I know it's hard to get you to watch TV
that isn't started. Well, I have seen most of season one, and I'm gonna dive in because everybody's telling
it's
me
it's terrific.
And I loved what I had seen. I've seen most of season one. It was terrific.
And none of the other, like, you know, the other DC shows do it for me.
Yeah, Arrow. I mean, I've seen Arrow shows up on The Flash.
And he does. They're pals.
And Arrow's
Arrow's Girl Friday her and Flash are science nerds.
Right.
So they like to hang out.
I know. Those episodes killed me. I was shipping. I think the term is shipping.
You were shipping.
I was.
K/S.
I didn't know. I thought I was too old to ship, but I did a little shipping when I saw those episodes.
It was so that as of right now, and I've always kind of liked The Flash, but this show has really kind of brought it up.
Yeah, because at first you're like, Superman has all these powers. Batman's got all these gadgets. Green Lantern can do anything, and he's flying around the intergalactic space cops.
Right.
What does a Flash do? Oh, he's fast. Like, so what?
Yeah, but he's got the
but
heart.
He's got it all, and his rogues gallery is so cool. Because, like, Superman's fast, too. What the hell?
Yeah, he's very fast.
They're both very fast.
And Wonder Woman's
got a jet.
And I like all of the main DC characters. I mean, if I had to pick, like, an obscure one, I mean, I like Mr. Terrific, because fair play is what I'm all about. But
I like Matter Eater Lad myself.
Matter Eater Lad, Bouncing Boy.
Plastic Man.
Plastic Man.
Plastic Man sucks.
Hula.
I got in a fight with somebody on Twitter. It was over Halloween. Because I love the Universal Monsters, right? As I think many of our listeners
do.
Yeah, I love them. I'm not, like, I don't have, like,
right.
You know, I don't have, you know, bobblehead
Funko Pops. Yeah, I don't have,
that's exactly what I was trying to remember. I don't have Funko Pops of the Bride of Frankenstein, right. But I like when Halloween, like 3 days before Halloween, I'm always like, where are my Universal Monster DVDs? And these days I can't find them because my life is a disaster.
Right.
So I go to stream them. Yeah, and they're DVDs. So I go to stream them, and the universe is smart. None of them are free.
Right.
Like if you get, you know, I got Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu.
Yeah, it's all a sham.
And they're all like, you got to pay. So I fume around the house, and I yell, and my wife's like, if you want to friggin' watch Frankenstein, just rent it. I'm like, I'm not going to pay when I already pay for Amazon Prime. And then she's like, you used to go to Blockbuster.
Yeah.
And get off your ass, and then you'd have to return it. I'm like, my wife's a genius. She's right. You push a button, and for $2, you can watch Bride of Frankenstein. Ridiculous. So I love all that crap. Invisible Man, The Mummy, The Werewolf, blah, blah, blah. I love them all. And Universal Monsters, the licensed thingamabob.
Have they ever crossed over with Star Trek? They've crossed over with everything.
Oh, man.
Has there been, you know, Star Trek versus Dracula?
No. No. They're really, I mean,
Data's just a cheap version of Frankenstein.
No, he's not. Has there ever been...
I can't come into this house and be smirched Data.
I don't think there's ever been... I'm trying to think, like, Tom Paris would have been into that.
Tom Paris would have been into that.
Yeah, well, because Tom Paris, in his holodeck
That's
episodes...
That's what he would be doing.
No, but he had Captain Proton, yeah. So he was into goofy shit. But, no, I mean, I don't... Wait. On Enterprise, they used to have movie night. And I think Trip Tucker used to show old movies. And I think maybe he did show an old Universal Monsters movie.
Well, I guess the closest I could think of was when Star Trek met Lucifer. And,
in the Madrix of Magus 2. Yeah. I mean, which is what this episode of Engage Official Star Trek Podcast is supposed to be all about. But let me just finish my thought about why I was getting
in please.
A fight.
Why are you talking about these people?
Because the Universal Monsters IP of today, which they're trying to bring back,
sure.
They want to tell you, and Monster Squad did this too,
right?
They want to tell you that...
That Wolfman has nards.
Well, they want to tell you that Wolfman
has nards.
They
used to piss me off as a kid. But remembering the original run of Monster... And I know the Monster Squad has...
Oh, it's great.
No, it's not great.
It's great.
No, it's not. Monster Squad is one of those movies that like following
like
generations have latched onto and found something in there, and I won't, you know, give them a hard time about that. But I remember when that happened, and I remember the same thing as like, you know, stop trying to make Fetch happen. Nobody calls them. No one said Nards.
Well, it was a PG movie. They had to call it. I couldn't call it.
They
called
him as junk, and or his you know, his
they
jewels.
Tried to do it. Well, it was like Johnny Dangerously. They couldn't say Dick. They had to call it as Dork.
Right.
But they called it Dork in Monster Squad too.
Yeah. The Nards thing was just like maybe it was a regional California kind of slang term.
Could have been.
But being in the tri-state area, I was enraged by that.
The only word Nards is for Wolfman.
Yeah.
Well, but what's funny
anyway,
is
so,
no, you say Monster Squad to anybody and like a reflex, like Wolfman's got nards. Like it's what you say.
Right.
Like it's like you hit somebody in the bottom of their knee and they kick you.
Right.
Wolfman's got nards. They try to sell the Creature from the Black Lagoon as a member of the Universal Monsters. And I say no.
I say thee nay.
I say no because... A Universal Monster has to be from Middle Europe in a castle in the olden days. Not now, and Invisible Man is English, but still, it's olden times and, you know, there's castles and stuff. Not from a California sea in the 50s. No. And I got in this fight, and then I said, it's like trying to make Plastic Man part of the Justice League. And this pissed more people off because Plastic Man is part of the Justice League. And I say, you know what? He's really not. So Plastic Man, who's great.
This is some grumpy old man BS, man. This is like, listen, Plastic Man is not, I don't care how many reboots you've put Plastic Man in. Plastic Man and Shazam, Captain Marvel, do not belong in the DC proper.
The Great Cheese, or whatever he's called.
The Big Red Cheese himself.
I love the Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Who doesn't? Gilman. He's the best one.
That's irrelevant. He's not a part of the Universal
Monsters.
Do you
remember when 3D was a thing in the 80s and Creature of the Black Lagoon was the PIX one.
Yeah, you had to go and to the 7-Eleven or get the Daily
7-Eleven
News.
7-Eleven to get your Daily News or get your sunglasses.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Engage, the official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
All right, so we're talking deep mythos today on Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. We're talking Plastic Man, and we're talking...
Can I ask you a question before we go any further about deep mythos?
Yeah.
You and I go back a while, and we've had a lot of conversations about different forms of mythos. In the tapestry that is Trek...
Yes.
Now, there are so many timelines in the myriad universe.
Yes.
Which is your favorite?
My favorite timeline?
Which is your favorite, like, and you can't pick the prime.
Right. Line.
Like, it's like, which offshoot
do you
find the most interesting and the fun to spend
time
with?
Well, it's the most famous. It would be the Mirror Universe. From Mirror, you know, just it's Spock's beard, you know, and that changed me.
Good
and then
facial hair is really
Mirror, and then they brought the Mirror Universe back in DS9, where Chief O'Brien was a crafty pirate.
Of course,
Smiley,
he was.
And Kira was a pansexual, sort of a demonic woman with.
Space Elvira.
She was with squeaky leather pants. And on this very show, if you go back, I talked about those pants with Nana Visitor.
Say, Sha-na-na.
And she talked about how when you watch the show, she seems really intense, but her pants squeaked so much that everybody in the crew was cracking up. And they had to dub all the lines because she had these squeaky pants as intendant Kira Nerys. Yeah, it's tough when your pants squeak. But no, you're right. I mean, the rich tapestry is what it's all about. So let's go back in time now to 1973. And there was a television show, which is controversial still. And I met when Denise and Mike Okuda was on this show a few weeks ago, and I said to them, the animated episodes are not mentioned in the Star Trek Encyclopedia, which is the official 2-volume tome of canon, and it isn't. It is still not. It was Gene's wish to not call it official canon for reasons we'll never quite know, but canon has leaked from the episodes, and we can talk about some of the specifics here. I've made some notes, but the animated series, which originally had a great name, by the way, the official original name of the animated series?
Star Trek the Cartoon.
It was called The Animated Adventures of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek.
Colon.
So there, it's like people who go to Comic-Con and call it CCI.
Yes.
Comic-Con International. Will you be at CCI this year? But what it was...
So we need to refer to it by its proper name.
Yes, The Animated Adventures.
As we tend to do.
The Animated Adventures
of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek.
22 episodes over a season and a half, 23 minutes each, 1973 was when it was on, and a little bit into 74. And this was done by the production company Filmation.
Filmation, makers of great cartoons like Batman and Tarzan in the 70s.
And?
Filmation is also He-Man.
There you go.
Filmation is, there's quite a few others in
there. And
there
are some similarities between He-Man and Star Trek, the animated series.
And the Batman, I mean, they're responsible for Batmite, and why Batmite was a thing in the 70s. But, and their sound effects.
Oh, yeah.
Their style of very close up on faces off to the set to the left or right.
It would be cheaper that way.
Yes. I mean, basically what it is like, here's a bunch of stills that we pan across, and we'll talk about that.
Filmation is a relatively low budget style, but it works for these stories. And what the animated series did was really smart, is that it said, what were things we could never do on Star Trek that we can do with animation?
Clearly.
So they had some really whacked out visual stuff, even if the
themes.
And themes also. Now, originally, Filmation, when they approached Roddenberry, I don't know who approached to, that aspect I don't know, but they wanted to make it much more kid-friendly. And what they wanted to do was to have each of the characters have like a kiddie cadet with them. So each of the characters would be training.
Happened.
And Roddenberry said no. He said, I want to make this show child friendly, but I don't want to make it a kid show.
But I want to make this really interesting for stoned dudes in the early 70s.
So it is not a kid show. And then the other thing he did
far from a kid
was
show.
They hired many of the writers were... Some of the episodes were written by Trek alum D.C. Fontana, the best episode, which is Yesteryear.
We'll be talking about that episode.
Yes, Yesteryear is dynamite. David Gerald.
Oh, my goodness. David Gerald. I love him.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. David Gerald wrote two episodes. And Larry Niven of the sci-fi novelist, he wrote an episode called The Slaver Weapon, which was an adaptation of one of his short stories. So the Kzinti race, which if you read Larry Niven's own mythos...
So is the short story, is that short story in canon?
No, but if you want to get technical, the baddies in his episode are they're like the Klingons of his universe called Known... I think it's called Known Space, the Larry Niven verse.
Sure.
So, and the Kzinti are like, so that's like if
so you... So that's like the first Star Trek crossover.
Yeah, it's like if you picked up a science fiction book and like suddenly the Klingon showed up. You're right. Like, whoa. And if you watched another episode, which you did, called Infinite Vulcan,
Infinite Vulcan was great because my favorite part is I'm sitting there watching this and I wasn't as well versed. I mean, I've watched plenty of the cartoon, but like watching them as homework assignments.
Yeah.
And I'm watching, and I'm like, all right, so there's this... clearly Chekhov isn't here because of the Red Scare. And then I see that Walter Koenig wrote that episode. I'm like, oh, so they threw him a bone. They're like, hey, Walter, we know that you're really artistic. Here you go, man. You could write an episode. What does he write? Is Spock 2? An exploration of gigantism? It was very telling. I am a big fan of Walter Koenig's Moon Trap. So whenever Walter Koenig is an auteur, I am all aboard.
Well,
all aboard the Psycorps.
You just touched upon a number of things there. So in Stavros Caniculus 5. When he mentions a bunch of events that have happened in lore, he mentions the eugenics wars, the galactic wars, and he's mentioned a bunch of races, and one of them is the Kzinti, which is a reference to this other episode.
Whoa.
So it's in there, man. Yeah, it's true.
In there, man.
So when when Roddenberry nixed the idea of the kids, right? And then he brought back some of these other writers and new writers as well that were legit sci-fi writers, not typical Filmation He-Man writers.
Right.
No offense to He-Man. And then he brought the cast back, right? Obviously, you need Kirk. Obviously, you need Spock.
Was it all of them?
Obviously, you need Kirk. You need Spock. You need Bones. You need them, right? Then you need additional voices for the guests and the bad villains and whatnot. James Doohan, is a master of voices. Obviously, he's Scotty. He's not really Scottish. He's Canadian. So they said, all right, we get a 2-for-1 deal. If we hire James Doohan again... We can have the character of Scotty be the actual voice of Scotty, and he can do everybody. So when Kor the Klingon shows up, he can do it. Caniculus 5, he can do anything. We need another woman, too. Well, Gene Roddenberry was always smart with the money, so he hired his wife, Majel Barrett Roddenberry, who's always involved in everything.
Q and Law herself.
So she... Nurse Chapel's back, the voice of the computer's back, and then a number of other female characters, including, and we'll get to her, Mress, is back, and then they figured that's it. So out in the cold, Nichelle Nichols, without a gig, George Takei, without a gig, Walter Koenig, without a gig. And Leonard Nimoy said, no way.
Nice.
He said, I'm not doing it unless you give my friends a gig. We gotta have Uhura, because she's a huge character, and we gotta have Sulu, because he's really important, and they were friends, and you need the whole thing about Star Trek is the diversity of the cast. You can't not have Sulu and Uhura,
and he's a man of integrity and a righteous man.
So Roddenberry and Filmation said, all right, and they said, and they brought Uhura back, which was important because in the Lorelei signal, an episode when the women have to take over because the men are all spooked by sirens, space sirens, Uhura takes the command. She's in the center seat, which is very exciting. And they had to have Sulu back, and Sulu's great also in Infinite Vulcan. He's like, ooh, it appears to be some sort of...
he doesn't say, oh my, but he says something like oh boy.
Yeah, it's pretty great. But Kanan got screwed.
Yeah.
And they're like, they put their foot down. They said, we don't really need Chekhov.
Koenig always gets screwed.
He got screwed. And
Seti eels.
Right, he got Seti eels in his ear. So he got screwed, and then everybody felt bad, and Koenig was a writer, and he's written some interesting books over the years, and that was his consolation prize. You get to write an episode, which maybe in a way is even cooler. I don't know.
Well, he always got the impression he always fancied himself as an artist. And
you know, there's an if you want to read, he made a very interesting diary of when he was on Star Trek: The Motion Picture. Mm-hmm. He went home every night and wrote in his diary, and that's a book called Chekhov's Enterprise, and it is very readable. I mean, sure, you can get it on Amazon for one penny.
I'll take a look.
And it is he's very funny, and it's like a lot of it is him sitting around doing nothing.
Right.
And it's about him playing practical jokes on Shatner and being a guy, being Chekhov, who's got like what 20 lines in that movie?
Rapscallion.
So, yeah. So anyway, that was the story. But like you say, Nimoy was a man of a righteous man, and he said, "No, bring my friends back." So that's what happened. So the two, but because we didn't have Chekhov, they were able to say, "This is a cartoon, and we're going to exploit what we can do in animation and create new characters." So in Chekhov's seat is Lieutenant Arex. And Edosian,
who looks very sad.
He does. He's kind of got like
a big mope.
He's got like, you know what, let's
and this is pre-Star Wars, right? Yeah. So the merchandising machine really wasn't what it was yet. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, we have a spot to fill. Let's make a freaky alien man. And what do? They make like a sad red camel. He's Joe Camel. He's like Joe Camel after all the cigarettes caught up to him.
He's a sad camel with three arms and three legs.
Yeah.
That's his one shtick.
Like a real camel.
Yeah. And then he was voiced by Doohan.
Of course.
Then you had, by the way, and he shows up. Peter David sent him into the future and brought him into the New Frontier novels. He's in Peter David's novels.
The actual character?
Yes, he is.
Oh, God bless you, Pad.
In addition
he is my favorite Star Trek contributor.
Peter David?
Yeah.
Peter A. David?
Peter A. David's contributions to maybe the Earth are some of my favorite things.
All right, so then in addition to Arex, you've got the one that, when you go to conventions, you are guaranteed to see at least one or two women dress up as a character who does not have many lines in the animated series.
A lot of sex appeal.
A lot of sex appeal. And we're talking about Lieutenant Mress, voiced by Majel Barrett. And she is, I think it's fair to say, a furry.
She is a furry. And I will say also the pop culture character that our friendship is built upon. I mean, like, our friendships, like, where we first fell in love, it was over her. It was a love triangle. You, me, and Mress. You know, all right, so tell me about Mress, because I got some, after watching a bunch of these episodes, I saw a theme.
She's a Cation, and, you know, she purrs.
And a Cation shows up in the Kelvin verse, if I'm not mistaken, Cations, right?
Yeah, there too, in bed with Kirk in Stid. peppered throughout. In Star Trek VI, there's one in the background. Mress has always had a posse, let's put it this way. But when you go to conventions, one of my favorite ones, there was a young woman who had the tail. She had the...
Oh, I mean, listen, a little glimpse into our life together. I mean, like, you show up, you go to a convention, and usually you're there in 5 minutes, and I got on my phone is pinging with a picture of you and a Mress. So, Star Trek fans, when you see Jordan Hoffman, host of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast, at your favorite Star Trek convention, and you are dressed as Mress, go to him,
and you'll be on your phone,
and you will show up on my communications.
And you'll be at Fairway in Brooklyn with your family, and you'll start cracking up, and your wife will be like, "What's happening?"
And I'll show her, and she'll be like, "Oh, another Mress."
So that's Mress, a giant cat woman, and she's great. So I gave you four assignments.
Wait, okay. Now, all right. You gave me four assignments to watch, and there were two themes I wanted. All right, so the ones I watched.
The titles, I said Yesteryear, which is legitimately great. DC Fontana's Yesteryear. The Mud.
Stop saying legitimately great. They all four of them are great. And any Trek fan that craps on these episodes should be ashamed of themselves.
Should be ostracized.
They should be put into a torpedo and sent into Genesis. Because this is these
torpedo base.
The animated shows are some heady stuff.
It's good
man.
Stuff. Okay, so Yesteryear, which is considered by most to be the best one, was the second one to air. I also asked you to watch Mudd's Passion.
Mudd Returns.
Harry Mudd, the third version of Harry Mudd.
I think it's called Your Name Is Mudd.
Yeah. I did not ask you to watch the second Tribbles episode.
No.
That was
you
too
know,
much. And then I asked you to watch.
Did Gerald write that?
Yeah.
Of course he did.
I asked you to watch Infinite Vulcan, written by Walter Koenig.
Whoa.
About plant. It was like a plant. It was like a green raspberry penis man with a necklace.
Right.
Called. Argos? Was that? No, not.
I think it was Aragorn. Oh, no. You know what it was? It was Angmar. I thought it was the Witch King of Angmar, but spelled differently.
And then, most importantly, I asked you to watch one of the greatest 23 minutes of pop culture, The Magics of Magus 2.
Okay. Now, that, when you, that was, those 22 minutes were some of the best pop culture, some of the best popular arts that I've enjoyed in a long time. All right, so I want to back up a second. Before we start getting to magics, I got a thing about that I noticed throughout these episodes, and it might just be me being perverted or having, you know, something, but I feel that, all right, each one of these episodes and the stuff that I've seen in the anime, they're dealing with heavy themes.
Yeah.
This is not a kid's show. I remember as a kid, you know, growing up in the 70s and 80s. I was born the year these came out. But I remember catching these in reruns and being excited, like, Star Trek cartoon, awesome, oh my God, and being, like, watching it. And then as a kid being, like, bored out of my mind. this is horrible. This is garbage. I can't watch this. But watching it as an adult, I'm like, whoa, there are big, abnormally large men in loincloths. Like, that's, somebody's into that. And then there's the furries. Someone's into that. And I'm noticing it through. I'm like, I think there are some real interesting themes happening.
So you think there is a sexual element to the anime?
Well, okay,
series.
So here's where...
Not in a negative way.
No. And this is a celebration. Star Trek celebrates all of these things. And as I'm watching this, and I'm like, okay, it's 1973, all right? A few years, Star Trek had come and gone, and now, like, this is new Star Trek. And the people that were working on this show... the themes that they were exploring, right? So, and the reason why I started thinking about this, because I was watching The Magics of Magmanar, or whatever that, what is it? The
Magics of Magus 2.
Of Magus 2. And I'm a big heavy metal fan. If there's one thing that I love just as much as the popular arts is demon and devil-based heavy metal from the 70s. Early Black Sabbath is something that I'm quite fond of.
That is your TOS.
That is my TOS. So I'm sitting there and I'm watching this episode, and I don't know where it's going. It's all trippy and everything's happening. All of a sudden, Lucian shows up, and I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, the devil just showed up with his cloven hooves? And I'm like, are they really going this way? And they go down. They've got Asmodeus. And it is some Dungeons and Dragons level devil worshiping, like Anton LaVey in California having orgies. That's what these writers were thinking about.
It absolutely was what they were thinking about. And the devil is good.
And the devil is good, man. Not only is the devil is good, but the devil and all the devils on Earth... couldn't survive, and they had to leave, and they got a bad rap, and look, God couldn't save Lucifer, but Kirk could.
And I want to give a quick thumbnail for those that maybe haven't seen Magics of Magus 2, or did see it and don't remember, because it's kind of weird. Like, you kind of have to it doesn't really flow naturally. It's a little bit all over the place.
It's strange, man. But
basically, the premise is they're going into the center of the galaxy.
Say you love Satan.
Because that's what the Enterprise does. And there is a black hole of sorts in the center of the galaxy. Because they think the galaxy is expanding and more stuff's coming out, which doesn't make any sense. It will be on the outer rim. But still, they go in and they fall through a... They drop into like some nether space. And
dude, it was the River Styx.
And then this dude shows up who looks like cloven hooves, and he seems
he
to have
like
magic.
He looks like Calabas from from Clash of the Titans.
He looks like Calabas
with no turquoise tunic.
And everybody calls him Lucian.
No. Everyone calls him Lucian.
Lucian.
Except Spock.
Calls him Lucian.
Lucian.
Now, this is something that happens a lot on animated Star Trek.
Because, I love that they did that.
Because they recorded these kind of quickly and on the fly, and they weren't all in the studio the same day. So if Nimoy's coming in on a Tuesday to read his lines, and he pronounces it one way, and then everybody else pronounces it the other way...
No, don't say that. I want to think... I like to think about it as, like, Kirk and the humans... They call him Lucian, but like enlightened Spock is like, actually, the Latin, you know, origins, it's Lucian.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with that, too.
And it made, as I was watching it, because that was one of my favorite parts, that like Spock, that like pompous ass, is going to go in there. He's like, it's actually Lucian. And for him to like, you know, kind of like hold on to it that way, I was like, I think it was just character development for
me. Wow. You're right. You're absolutely right. I like that.
So that doesn't happen often.
They go through this pan-dimensional portal, and basically their new pal Lucian shows them how magic is real.
Yes.
And, you know, and let's think back to Arthur Clarke's fifth law or whatever it is. You know, any technology from the far enough future will seem to modern man like magic.
Right.
And Spock is fine with that. He's like, perhaps it is logical to accept that something is not logical. And so pretty soon he's like playing chess with his mind.
Right.
And Sulu is imagining geisha women show up and are on the deck, on the bridge. And when they're down on the planet, first they're just down in like some like amorphous vaporous world, and right, they're all floating around going, oh, and then Lucian says, I'd forgotten how much bodily integrity means to you humans. Yes.
And he's really jovial, and he's like he's really happy, and he's like, I just want to have a good time all the time, like the devil does.
And so he puts them on this planet, and he's like, let me show you how great magic can be.
Yeah.
And
he's an apple,
which has its biblical connotations,
yeah,
obviously. Then he snaps his finger, and like a crystal palace appears.
Yeah. There's this one shot in that he's like, he's talking about like, we here on Devil's World, we do all sorts of fun things, and they cut to the shot of a weird, trippy Gandalf yellow clad wizard with a pointy hat, and he like does like a woo-doo-doo-doo-doo, and yeah, and a weird crystal building grows. It is 3 or 4 seconds of perfection. I want like when I die and I take my last breaths, I have all sorts of like, I want to hear this song, and I want to have this last meal, and I want these people around me. The last seconds of my life, I want those 3 seconds of that yellow wizard creating that crystalline structure, and that when my soul dies, yeah,
You're gonna live there.
I'm gonna live there with, yeah, Lucian. That was
listening.
So you love Satan.
Listening to Sabbath Bloody Sabbath.
Let's just Sabbath Bloody Sabbath. So like, right. So I'm watching this episode, and all right, finish your thing. Yeah.
So then, but then there's another image of like, there's like a woman who like is dressed in a dowdy manner.
Yeah.
And then again, he snaps his finger, and then suddenly she's like in a gown, and this man appears.
Yep.
So like, you know,
it's a little rapey. There's the. Like, there are a couple things in there that are like, yeah, all right, 1973. Like, is Sulu, like, what does Sulu really wish for? Yeah. Geisha girls. Yeah. And he's like, oh, I really want some good sushi, too, yeah, you know? And then...
It's not the best, not,
yeah,
the best.
So that was...
But it gets pretty wild. But then, you know, the story structure has to change. And Lucian then goes on trial, and it's the Salem witch trials again. And visually, by the way, when they get to the center of the galaxy, by the way, there's, like, fireworks everywhere.
Yeah.
There's, like, these primary colored, like... curved, curvilinear form.
It is. It's just like stoner fodder. Yeah. It is. It is like 1973. Like, after you're done watching this, go read your Doctor Strange comic, and because it was like that was all Jim Starlin esque. Like,
it's pretty wild.
Stuff.
And then there's a moment where they're like, Kirk is in a when he after the Salem witch trial thing, they're like blasting like red spheres of power at each other, and he's like trapped in like a rainbow, and it's like, if you remember the wrappers to Fruit Stripe
Gum,
it was Fruit Stripe Gum the cartoon, which I imagine was a big deal in 1973.
It could even be that they had like some Fruit Stripe Gum wrappers and they just like took a close-up picture of it and then swirled it around.
I'd like to hope so. And that's what goes down. And then the punchline is, before man stepped on Earth, there were these creatures, the Magans.
Right.
And there are these cloaked, hooded. They look like Cobra Commander before the...
No, they look they look like if DC Comics The Vigilante didn't wear a black bodysuit, but like gaudy robes.
Yeah.
And they had like his little face mask. But it also has like, it's that pre... 80s horror movie, the early 70s metal themed, like Black Sabbath and yeah. and the heavier bands, like, you know, they didn't have a lot of the like the pentagrams imagery yet set.
Mm.
So a lot of their kind of creepiness were weird futuristic robed guys with face masks and stuff.
Yeah.
And like that's where like as soon as those guys showed up and I was like, whoa.
And again, it's just a second. It's like one like we were the Magans. They show these like purple robed beings. And they were on Earth and then they were trying to protect mankind or something. And then they couldn't. And they zoomed off to another planet in these pods. And then and now that Kirk is there...
Oh, wait, you're leaving out a big part.
All right.
They lived on Earth, and they loved Earth, and they loved the Earth people, but they looked like... You know, they had that robe, but they also had... They looked like devils. They're devils. They are devils. They had horns and stuff like that. So all of... What they're implying in is that all the devils from Judeo-Christian, you know, religious doctrines are based off of the Magans, which... So basically, like, just... blows religion out, you know, the water here, and that the devil is actually just a good time alien, and you got it all wrong, Earth. And that was the message that they
and
were...
And now they're pissed. Now that Kirk is on their planet, they want to put him up on trial.
Right.
And Lucian, who's like, he is saying, no, these are my friends.
Right.
And then you're going to defend, and there's a fight.
Well, then they know. They have a Salem witch trial. There's pentagrams. There's Puritans. There's Solomon Cain. And it's like this. It is a... I had to pause it because it was the most like metal thing, and it was like there is Kirk, Spock, and Bones standing in a pentagram surrounded by like, you know, pilgrims, and with the devil himself in the stand. It was like an album cover of like a failed metal band from Cincinnati, and it was so... I was like, this is peak Star Trek for me.
It was beautiful.
And I have to say, after watching that episode, if I wanted to like stack up all my favorite episodes of Star Trek, the magics of Magic All is now like at the top.
Well, I knew you'd like it. That's why I was one.
Yeah, man. I was on brand.
You were
for
on
me.
Brand, and then and of course you put it on. You streamed it on one of your streaming platforms, and your wife's in the putting the kids to bed. It's like, and the music. And what did she
say? Well, that was the thing. So I said to her, I was like, you know, we had just finished watching The Flash, to bring it all back, And she's like, what do you want to watch? I'm like, well, you know, I'm doing the podcast and I got a homework assignment. I got to watch the animated series. And like, by the time I finished the sentence, she was already in the kitchen. So I turn it on and the music comes on.
Ba, 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 ba,
and it's fake ba, ba, Star Trek.
Ba, ba,
it's not real.
Ba, ba, do, do,
yeah,
do, do,
sure.
Do, do.
And it is this, it's the alternative track.
Right.
And it's
not the original Star Trek.
And she hears that, and she's like, "What is that?" She's like, "Oh my God, that sounds terrible." And it's the quality is low, but I found these, and the animation is not great.
The animation. See, here's the thing: the illustrations are wonderful.
They're illustrations. The artwork is beautiful. The animation is
cheap.
Cheap
Filmation. Cheap junk. There's repetitive shots. They have Like on the Flintstones. When
He-Man holds aloft his magic sword. The same shtick every time. Right.
There's the same running, the same punch that Kirk does. It's recycled images all over the place. The sound effects are the same from the Herculoids.
Yeah. The creatures that come out when we get to the Infinite Vulcan.
Squawk it.
That like... I mean, the Super Friends battled that beast, and this. I mean, it was so.
It's the same
stock
stuff.
Sound.
It is, but the stories are whacked out.
They're really trippy.
And the illustrations are really cool.
They're really trippy, and I got the so like that was the thing. The magics of Mongol 9 was what made me like. I was watching that, and I was like, I had to look up on Wikipedia what year that episode came out and what was the corresponding Black Sabbath album.
And which was?
Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath.
Yeah.
Which is six albums in. So that gives those writers many years to marinate with, Sabbath.
They had already listened to Supernaut.
They had already known Supernaut over and over. And that was the thing. And I feel that like there are heavy metal overtones to that episode. That are like proto metal, like the early days of when Led Zeppelin was still mighty.
Well, the guy who wrote it was a fellow by the name of Larry Brody, mm-hmm. and Larry Brody was originally brought in to pitch for original series Trek, but his stories were never. The show was canceled before any of his stories made it past
poor
the pitch
Larry.
Stage. But he stayed in the Trek world. He had an episode produced of Voyager called Tattoo, which is a Chakotay episode.
But everybody's favorite.
He stayed in animation, and he was a showrunner in the 90s on a Marvel show.
Oh?
The Silver Surfer cartoon.
Whoa! So yeah, this guy was totally tripping out and doing this. And when he was an older man and he got that Silver Surfer cartoon, and the Silver Surfer cartoon was
a little weak.
Yeah, those 90. The only good 90s Marvel cartoon was, well,
Spider-Man. Two.
Spider-Man, but the X-Men one is the one everyone gets all excited about. But awesome. That was I really enjoyed those 22 minutes.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Engage.
Engage.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
And then you watched Infinite Vulcan.
So then the next one
which
I watched
was not as action-packed.
No, but I delightful in that. Like, as soon as I'm watching the credits and I saw Walter Koenig wrote it, that's when I connected. I'm like, oh, they threw him a bone because they cut him out. You know, I Walter Koenig.
Yeah,
that celebrate him, so, but I also laugh at like Walter Koenig's Moontrap. And as soon as I saw that, all I could think of is like, oh, another Koenig sci-fi joint.
So the elements in this are sentient plants, cloning, and then giant Spock, and the way that Stavros Caniculus 5 introduced him right before it cuts to commercial is, behold, Spock 2.
Walter Koenig was like, okay, I got this assignment. I have to, I got to write, I've got this great idea. They're going to clone Spock, but he's going to be big. And I was thinking about calling him, wait, Spock 2. And I was just like, are you kidding me? And then all I wanted to see was Stavros and Spock 2 make love. two giant men making love in front of Kirk and Bones. They would have been so uncomfortable. And that's how I felt that all that episode ended, where it's like, I will stay here with Stavros, and together we will be in love, and we'll solve the riddles of the universe.
That's the thing, is that Stavros Caniculus 5 wants to create Spock 2 to somehow bring greatness to the galaxy in an undisclosed way. And even though they're bad because they're capturing, they've got these winged purple pterodactyls.
There's
a lot of
weird stuff in this episode, man. Like it's all like, it shows up. They land on the planet and then they find a tribble with legs, and Sulu's like, "It's adorable. I must have it." And he picks it up and like it poisons him. Right. And that's how these guys, the plant guys, come in. Like the threads to get to Spock 2.
It's almost incoherent. It's almost incoherent. You just got like each new scene is like it's a new story, and then they get, of course, they like descend into.
That's what you get for hiring Koenig.
they descend into the core of the planet on like this big elevator disc, and it's the same sound effect as every other. And then, of course, they get there, and then it becomes like a hover disc.
Right.
It's like...
It was just write what you can. Write what you know, Koenig. Write what you know.
So then your next assignment, you checked out yesteryear, right?
Okay. So I said to you, and I think after I watched Spock 2.
Yeah. The Infinite Vulcan.
Infinite Vulcan, colon, Spock 2. And then I was like, where's Mress? There's no Mress. Yeah, and you're like, oh, Mress is all over the place. Check out the next ones, right? So the next one I watched was Young Spock Adventures, when he goes back in time.
Yesteryear.
Yesteryear.
Which is wonderful.
DC Fontana's Yesteryear, which was awesome. There's no Mress in that episode.
Yeah,
so,
I guess I screwed up.
You totally screwed me up.
There's the Andorian, though.
The Andorian was awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
And he's like, I am being written out of history. So long.
he was so
chipper about it.
He was like, well, listen, Andorians are warriors. We know when we've lost. It's time for me to go and be written out of existence. Good luck to you.
Yesteryear was a spin on City on the Edge of Forever, arguably the greatest Star Trek TOS episode of all time. They go back to the Guardian. Why they're there? They're just doing research.
And what I liked about that is they show up, and there is, I think it's Spock is doing research.
Yeah.
Kirk is there. There's a big bird creature.
Yes.
Yellow bird man creature.
Yeah.
Some kind of like phoenix beast man.
Yeah.
And then there is a very like dour, like duchess kind of woman who somebody out there is listening. She is recycled artwork from another Filmation thing.
You think so?
It might have been the Batman cartoon. I got to find out because I saw it and I was like, oh, I remember her. And it wasn't remembering her not from that episode. I was remembering her from something. And she's a character in, like, that artwork was recycled later on in Filmation.
Which means she maybe showed up again on Eternia.
It's possible.
With Man-At-Arms and Orko.
It is possible that she's, like, Evil Lynn's cousin.
Evil Lynn.
Yeah. Evelyn. But the fact that they're, like... Ram-Man's cousin Sam.
Triclops.
Sam-Man.
Wait, not Triclops.
Triclops. Triclops. Yeah. Man-E faces.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. The man-E
faces. Emmanuel faces.
Emmanuel E faces.
Emmanuel faces is what Man-E faces is short for.
Man-E faces.
So, but they're all like, we're studying time.
Right, yeah,
and the three of them are there with clipboards standing in front of a portal. The portal's like, when in time did this? And they're like, fascinating, fascinating. And then they go up to the ship and everyone's like, who's your friend, Kirk?
Right.
And then the Andorian walks in. He's like, Kirk, I'm the one. What was the Andorian's name in it? Do you remember?
Shev or something. I don't know.
So you could still keep K/S if that guy was...
I don't remember his name. Okay. But what they did was they monkeyed with the timeline. And as is in canon, when you're near the Guardian, you don't feel the effects of the timeline change. But when you leave...
Whoa.
Then you're in a new reality.
I'm your cousin Marvin. Marvin Berry.
So they go up to the ship... And Spock is no longer the first officer or the science officer. It's some Andorian who's like a cool guy, but he's not Spock.
Totally chill Andorian.
And
he looked good in the blue.
He did.
Has there been an action figure of him? Have there been merch?
John Van Sitters, are you listening? JVC, come on, man. First of all, let's remember his name.
Right.
Thalen, was that his
Thalen.
Name?
Thalen, it was. Yeah. It was Thalen.
Can we get him on something?
Yeah, we need some Thalen merch, man.
Yeah, on a t-shirt, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Him, you know, it should be some kind of...
I want a Thalen Funko Pop.
Well, it's got to be some kind of Googaw where he dissolves and then Spock takes his place. Like maybe
it's maybe one of those pens.
Pen.
Like a naked lady pen, like you turn it upside down instead of the dress disappearing.
Or,
it goes from Andorian to Vulcan.
I was thinking like a mug where you put in hot water.
it turns a freezy freaky glove.
Yeah. All right, well I'll run
work
up the
on that, Star Let's Trek see. Man.
So they go up to the ship and what happens is Spock is not Spock, and it's like a change. Of course, this was recycled idea.
Spock not Spock.
It was like was not was. It was like in Trespass. You know, when the Nausicaan didn't pierce Picard's heart in the Domjot table, and he became a mealy mouthed mush.
Right.
This something happened. So Spock has to go back and correct what's happened. But because of the grandfather clause, he already kind of knows what he has to do because he has vague memories of as a child.
A strange cousin saved me from some serious trouble during my not pon far thing.
His walkabout. What is it called? It's called the
pon close.
No, it's not. Shut up. The pon close. It's his
Jamie Farr.
No. Kazwan. It's called Kazwan ritual. So he goes back in time, and Amanda's there, and Sarek is there.
Okay, so that was amazing. He was like, Kirk, Captain, I need typical Vulcan garb from the early 70s and a tote bag to carry it. And then Kirk goes, I'll ask the staff. And so he gets on the communicator. He's like, we need, you know, proper clothes from this time period. And then just gets beamed down.
Yeah.
And he's like, the most efficient crew in the galaxy. he's like, I love the efficiency of my crew. I can tell them I want some nonsense, and it's here like that.
That's great.
And then he goes back into and like going to old like. I want the young Spock adventures.
Oh.
I want, because like three shows up and then he's being bullied by little elf kids.
Which was yanked directly into Spock, into Star Trek 2009. The first time you meet young Spock is taken. I mean, it's an homage. It's an homage to yesteryear for sure.
And it was so, and I'm watching that. And then how they all speak to each other, like when it's just Vulcans hanging out. Like, it's a bunch of monotone jerks.
Yes, father.
So as much as I want to watch a young Spock, like, miniseries, it would be the most monotone, droning thing.
Now, here's what it is. All right, here's what it is. It's young Spock adventures, but Spock has a classmate and a best buddy, and it's Worf's great uncle from Star Trek VI, who was a liberal Klingon.
Yes.
So he's a kid, too, because they're roughly the same age. So Counselor Worf, or whatever he was, the lawyer in Star Trek VI.
Yeah, Barrister Worf.
Barrister Worf is on Vulcan, and that's why he's cool Klingon, because he is Spock's playmate. So it's young
that's
Uncle
Worf.
That's
you fan-casting.
This is me.
This is you making stuff up.
This is what I do at night, and when my wife is like, "Why won't my husband talk to me? Why am I being ignored?" Like, quiet, I'm in my mind.
I gotta work on this pitch for IDW.
All right, so
the young Spock adventures were pretty awesome, and the best part is when Sarek, he's like, "Who do I know, you traveler?" And he's like, "I'm Selek, your cousin." And Sarek just looks at him and just does the eyebrow raise. I was like, "That was great."
And it's just one move because it's Filmation, they're cheap.
Right, so and an eyebrow raise is they can do eyebrows for 20 minutes, and I would be like laughing the whole time. You know, the thing about the Filmation likenesses of the actors is really good.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though we make fun of the art, like they are skilled illustrators.
Yeah, you know who everybody is. Scotty, maybe not, but everybody else you get, you know? Yeah, it's pretty cool. Whoever the kid was that does the voice...
Right.
Of
he was no Alexander, but he was
yes, father. Yeah. Yes, father.
I must do this by myself.
Yeah, no, I
stay home, you silly, silly family pet.
Right. So yes, that's the big money draw. So the pet Saylat, which
Selek, Saylat and Spock.
The pet Saylat Ichaya, which was canonical because they mention him in something, and it's like Spock had it was something like a teddy bear, and Bones is like teddy bear. So
that cold fish, he couldn't love anything.
Ichaya, and this is a very emotional moment. You know, our friend
Ichaya is a really good name for a dog.
It would be a big white.
How
furry
many of
dog.
You out there have named your pets after Spock's pet?
Yeah. And then that pet would also rescue you and poison itself to save you.
Oh my god, that was heartbreaking.
On your Kazwan ritual.
And that pet with a stupid face.
And he races, so then the pet has to... And it's like, you know, so he's doing his Kazwan ritual, which is like walkabout. and then the S hits the fan. Aichaya steps in the way of what is going on? What's the problem?
The was basically Selleck.
Yeah.
This distant cousin that Spock vaguely remembers. He's like, oh, yeah, he saved my life once, and then I never saw him again.
Yeah.
And so that was, you know, supposed to be Spock. He goes back in time, and then the dog, and it's all sorts of...
Right. It's very emotional. So it's and he corrects the timeline. He learns a lot about himself. We learn a lot about Vulcan, and it all fits nicely in a bow.
So what I want to know is, when he returns home...
Yeah.
What life path... Thalen go on if Thalen wasn't going to be there. Where is Thalen?
He winked out of existence.
No,
maybe.
He exists. He's just his timeline is different.
Oh, man. Well, this is like, you know.
That's the IDW pitch right there, baby.
What happened to that? What happened to Thalen in general, or what happened to that specific Thalen?
Post-yesteryear Thalen.
He goes through like some sort of tunnel. And I don't know. He could be trapped forever.
He's waiting for Peter David to mold him like clay.
Well, I don't know. It could be like the two Lazaruses fighting in the alternative factor, and he's just trapped in an amorphous void for eternity.
Or it could be Kelvin versus Thalen.
It could be like, you know, some theorize that when you use the transporter, your soul ceases to exist and a new one is created.
Some theorize. Now, are they like IRL humans or Roddenberry humans?
No, there are. It's brought up a lot.
Okay,
some say it's like the end of the Prestige, right?
No,
if you remember the Prestige, when Hugh Jackman goes into a tank and he dies, but the new one comes out. You know, some say that's what beaming is all about. This is brought up a lot. If you read James Blish's Spock Must Die, this is suggested in that text, which is why Bones doesn't like going through the transporter.
Interesting.
I spoke about it with the
fascinating.
I spoke about it with the Okudas.
Fascinating.
And they would neither confirm nor deny that that's what they felt.
Whoa, heavy.
You also
All right. So then I watched. The last one I watched was all about Mud.
Yeah.
And
Mud's Passion, I think it's called.
So
it's Love Potion.
It's Love Potion. And it's Mud going around being a rapist. But it is a... that's where Mares showed up.
Yeah, there's a lot of Mares. That's the why I suggested you see, because there's a lot of Mares in
there. And it was the pinup shot of Mares.
The one that you see when you Google Mares.
When you Google Mares of her, like, you know, kind of being alluring. And then you just hear her. She's like, hello, I want to have sex with you, Scotty. And
she gets turned on to Scotty.
And then you're like...
And he turns her down.
Yeah. But I feel that, like, Mares really opened the door for folks who find that...
Furries. Is there a pop culture furry that predates Mares? There must be.
There has the Cowardly Lion. I mean, is he sexy?
To some. Who are we to judge? Well, also Bugs Bunny.
Bugs Bunny.
And especially with the eyelashes. Yoo-hoo!
When Bugs Bunny gets in drag, he's great.
Oh, my God.
But there is a... Mares is something, man. Mares, I feel like, really takes the whole thing. And, like, Mares is just no bones about it. I am a sexy cat. And I am down for some space travels.
Yes, yeah.
And
yeah.
That is her thing. And the way she talks, she's just...
Hey, Brian, have you seen Mares?
I looked it up on
the MRESS. Yeah. What
I
are you?
Funny before,
yeah. Yeah, and that's why you got out of the room earlier.
Yes, that's exactly why.
And when she talks, like, you don't get this from a still Googling.
No,
but the way her muzzle is, the way that she talks and her like her cat cheeks don't go to like teeth; they go up, and there's this. It's very suggestive,
right?
And the animation of her.
My God, look at all those.
Okay, Brian, look on the left hand of your screen. Brian just Googled up Mares.
Looking at things.
Well, when you put Mares into Google image search on the first page, listeners, you will find a picture of me. And by the way, it's not a very becoming photo of me. I'm wearing a shirt that's a little too tight. I'm in full comic book guy regalia over there. It's a picture I took at one of the conventions with a Mares So like Chris was saying earlier, and there's somebody did a drawing, a DeviantArt drawing of her and Arix and the Kzinti, what we were talking about earlier from the episode Slaver Weapon, that purple dude.
She is nothing but fetish-sized on the internet.
Is this where the Thundercats came from? Yeah.
Mares has been fetishized, but she's a good character, you know? I mean, she...
She is. I really wish they would do more with her.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how I feel. Like, where it's like, you know, I laugh, and Mares brings me lots of joy from just kind of like, oh, the humanity of life. But but her... As a character, like, come on, Star Trek, do something with a sexy cat lady.
It's like Boba Fett at the end of Empire. You're like, more of that guy, please.
Is Mares the Boba Fett of Star Trek?
Wow.
I don't know. Who is the Boba Fett of Star Trek?
Well, see...
Ensign Roe?
Yeah, Ensign Roe is the Boba Fett of Star Trek.
You know?
Like that's a good call.
No.
Because... For a million different reasons. She absolutely is. Who is the Jango Fett of Star Trek?
That would be Kim Cattrall's character in the Spock mystery.
Valeris. Yeah. Oh, man.
Mares is...
It sucks that when you bring up Boba Fett, now that friggin' Jango Fett ruins it. Poor Star Wars fans and those prequels.
Garbage. So there is a there's something up with Mares.
Yeah.
So Harry Mudd, they bring him back.
Yeah.
He's got it with his his shirt buttoned too low and his comb over, and he's just like, he even looks he's a little slimier in as animated.
It's like even in that form, disgusting.
And he's just really gross. And he just shows up and just like he's just dirty.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big fan of that character.
It's of its era. It's not my favorite either. You know,
yeah, that's where I was.
Like even Mudd's women, the space prostitutes in 1966 was an interesting idea, but it's a little bit. Hasn't aged as well as other things.
No, it hasn't. And that's kind of was like, you know, and that was the thing. Like, and I was watching this, and I'm like, this is not kid friendly. The opening scene, he's like, bring her out and I'll make sure she falls in love with me. Yeah. I'm so disgusting. And he's, and I love they're on the planet, the lawless planet.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're here to arrest you. And he's like, you can't arrest us. Federation law is not, you know, it's not recognized here. And then all like the townies were like, yeah, captain.
Yep. Mudd is, you know, when you're at conventions, there's always a cool guy dressed as Harry Mudd, and it's like,
always a cool guy
you want to give him a high five, and then you're like, why are you dressing up like Harry Mudd? You know, if you're gonna go that route, go Cyrano Jones.
Yeah, or Stavros number five.
Stavros Caniculus 5. You need to be 25 feet tall to do that.
That's what, you know, it's like that guy that went to New York Comic Con last year and built the Hulkbuster armor. We need someone to make a two-scale Stavros Caniculus 5 cosplay, where it's just like a large tunicked man. That was the other thing that I noticed was there was a lot of shirtless ripped dudes on the animated show. You had Lucian.
Yeah, he's shirtless.
You had Stavros.
Yeah,
there was somebody else that I saw, and I was just kind of like, all right, you know, they've got sexy cat ladies, and they got something for the other side.
And this was programmed at kids on Saturday mornings in the early 70s. It's a hell of a thing. And so if you've never watched Star Trek, the animated series, you can on any of your favorite streaming platforms. And for the first time, it just got put on Blu-ray, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the thing. I've always known that they were the lesser of the Trek. Like, if you wanted to, like it's just... slightly above Enterprise in terms of where it fits in the hierarchy, but
wow,
it's like a notch above Enterprise and about like 6 feet above STID. But it is I was really surprised at how much I enjoyed watching them, not just from a novelty perspective and not because of the drugs, but because it was a like. There was heavy stuff going on, and it's a little clever, and it's kind of like if you like Star Trek, here's some weird themes.
It is nice. Like, for if there are people out there that love original series and the characters and have never watched them, not, you know, there's 22 episodes, I think. Not every one of them hits it out of the park. But, like, there's enough there. It's like, you know what? This is the extra season that you always wanted. You know, it's still Star Trek. You know, it's got a very similar tone. And as we mentioned, the animation maybe isn't so hot, but the illustrations are really cool. And there's some weird, even the first one called Beyond the Farthest Star, there's like sentient clouds and like giant spaceships. And with like, they do things that they could never do on any of the shows thus far, which is have interiors of ships that are just gigantic with like huge computers and many corridors.
Dare I say that it is the hardest of hard sci-fi in Star Trek?
No, not when you've got...
like, not when you read the Eugenic Wars books.
No, hard sci-fi. Not when you've got characters like Geordi LaForge and Seven of Nine. When Seven of Nine is in her astrometrics lab.
That's some hard sci-fi right
some
there.
Some hard
that
sci-fi.
That is diamond hard sci-fi. Has that term been used on the show before?
I would like to think so. That is when, you know, there's sci-fi, there's hard sci-fi, and then there's diamond hard sci-fi. I read that once, and it stayed with me.
Unobtainium
hard sci-fi. Well, listen, I think we're just about out of time. Thank you, Chris Racky of Geek.com. Where we can read.
Hey, can I plug something?
Yeah, go ahead.
So the other day, famous scientist Neil deGrasse Tyson came by our office.
Yeah.
And we were talking to him. And one of my colleagues, Will Greenwald, asked him to sign his phaser. He had one of those phaser remote controls. And it was like we were done. We were doing an interview with him, and it was done and everything. And he was just kind of hanging out with the staff. And I asked him, like, what was your favorite, because he's a big Star Trek fan.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
What is your favorite Star Trek? Like, not episode, but like, which?
Are you TNG?
Are you TNG? What is it? And he told us, not only does he tell us, but he also explains to us who his favorite captain is and why. And you have to go to geek.com to find out.
Jerk. Oh, man.
But we'll be, by the time this episode airs, it'll be live.
Is this a video or is it a...
It was off the thing. Off the cuff, so it'll be written, but we do have some cell phone video of it that we will probably stitch together.
So Google geek.com Neil deGrasse Tyson by the time
Star Trek,
and you'll see the article, and you'll know. I would like to know who his favorite character is.
I'll tell you when we stop recording.
I'm going to guess. I'm not going to look at your face. Did he say his favorite captain or his favorite character?
He said, the question was, what is your favorite, what Star Trek do you like best?
Okay.
And then he then dovetails into which is his favorite captain.
I got you. Well, I'm going to say that his favorite Star Trek is TOS, and then his favorite captain is difficult to say. It might be Picard. I don't know. I'm going to have to read Geek.com.
You're going to have to read Geek.com to find out, but I will tell you, it is his reasons for why he likes the captain is fascinating.
He likes Archer, then. That's an Archer. All right, good. Well, we'll find out. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to everybody out there. Remember to, like us on Facebook. And this was a lengthy episode. We went deep into the mythos. Deep. I got mythos all over my shoes. Brian's like,
I got mythos on my fingers.
Brian's like, I got to get out of here, man. I got to get to
Thanksgiving.
Jersey.
My family's waiting for me.
Shut up.
We closed an hour and a half ago.
The office is closed. All right, we'll catch you next week with another great episode. Until then.
Security alert to all decks. Kirk out.
We'll see you next time.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.